Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
We'll see what happens in the next 48 hours. Who's going to be here? Who's not going to be here? Danny Vietti, from CBSSports.com joins us here to talk a little bit about the upcoming baseball trade deadline. How's it going, Danny? Good?
Hey, Chris. How's it going? Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for joining us. And, you're talking about some potential blockbuster trades coming up in the next 48 hours. And we know that most blockbuster trades don't always come to fruition. But if there were to be a couple, give me a couple that you're taking a look at right now.
Well, it's always tough, especially when we're talking New York Mets baseball, because I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going on in Queens right now. But
no.
If I were to make a guess, it would involve some team from California, and I say that because I think Noah Syndergaard is on his way out. They've been trying for a long time now to try and get some buyers, but the problem is the asking price is so high. And since we are on the San Diego radio network, just to give you an idea of what they're looking for, Bob Nightingale reported already that it's going to take Luis Patino, Luis Urias, and Mackenzie Gore all to get one 26-year-old pitcher. And I think that's going to be the biggest stepping stone, you know, going forward, and the biggest hurdle going forward is, are the Padres willing to give up their future to get a 26-year-old pitcher who is in the midst of his worst season? And that's a question that the front office is going to have to consider going forward. I personally don't think it will take those three guys to get Syndergaard. I do think the Mets will take Gore. Excuse me, the Padres want to keep Gore. I think it'll take Patino in either Urias or maybe Mejia or possibly one of the outfielders and Franmil Reyes and Hunbro.
Danny Vietti from CBS Sports is with us on the SDCCU fan hotline. You know, Urias' name has come up so often, and I could certainly see with the way he's struggling that the Padres might be listening to some offers from him. But again, you mentioned it correctly. Nobody knows what the Mets are doing. But why would the Mets even want another second baseman? They already have Cano. They have Jeff McNeil. They have Rosario at shortstop. I mean, are the Mets would that even fit if the Padres were willing to offer those players? Would that even make sense for the Mets side?
Now, I wish I had a nickel for every time somebody asked me why are the Mets doing blank, because I would be a rich man if that happened. But Urias, here's the deal with Urias. He had a coming out party last year, hit 18 home runs for AAA, and kind of put himself on the map, and he's been a top prospect really ever since. And I think what the confusing part is that the latest news is that New York, they want to compete this year. And I'm as confused as you are, because Urias is clearly not ready for the big leagues. He needs a little bit more time to develop his swing. He's late on fastballs, and he's not exactly attacking the breaking balls yet. So he needs a little bit more time to develop. So I'm as confused as you are in terms of the New York Mets being interested in Urias. But at the same time, if the Mets want to look towards the future, which is what we all thought was going to happen with them trading Syndergaard, then Urias would be a clear option, because Robinson Cano is going to be on his way out. Jed Lowry hasn't played a game all season long, so he would be the future answer. But then all of a sudden they make this trade for Stroman and just puts all us MLB writers on the fence, and we don't know what's happening now. So I think all of us are at a bit of a loss for answers in terms of what's going on in Queens.
As far as what's going on in San Diego, just from your perspective, Danny, I mean, this team has slipped actually behind the Mets now in the wild card race. Realistically, this season is kind of a pipe dream. Does that change anything for the Padres, or do you think that the best thing for this organization is to stay the course that they've been on, let all of these young players develop, see what they really truly have before they do anything too radical.
Yeah, between all the teams in the entire league, I have the Padres and the White Sox as the two single teams that have the brightest future. And I think Padres fans should be ecstatic about what's coming, because between Mackenzie Gore, and you've already seen what Fernando Tatis can do, and then they also have Luis Patino coming up through as well, who has really good stuff on the mound. I already pinned the Padres and White Sox as my 2021 World Series prediction, so write that down, and I will come back after you guys in 2021 to prove myself correctly. But
you can host the show if that happens. I'll tell you that, Danny.
That's a deal. Consider this a handshake, then.
All right, you got it.
I just believe the Padres' future is a lot brighter than the present right now. And it's not that the present isn't good. It is good, because it just involves a little bit of patience. You know, that old saying, you know, patience is a virtue. I think this is absolutely correct with San Diego. With Paddock and Luke Casey and Gore coming up, they're going to man that starting pitching rotation. If they can get one ace, somebody like Syndergaard or somebody like Trevor Bauer, and there's three big-time guys coming off the books this offseason as well that the Philadelphia Phillies are going to be going after, and the San Diego Padres should be looking at these guys, Gerrit Cole and Madison Bumgarner, and there are a few other guys out there like Tanner Roark that will be available as well. Not as sexy in the names with Tanner Roark and Alex Wood, but those are the types of guys that are veteran guys that can come onto this rotation and really kind of take Paddock and with Casey under their wing and show them what to do, just very similarly as Jake Arrieta did in Philadelphia this year and last year.
Danny Vietti from CBS Sports joining us to talk about this Major League Baseball trade deadline coming up a couple of days from now. Leave the Padres out for a second, the Mets out for a second. Are there any really eye-opening names that have a chance to be moved between now and Wednesday?
I think, as I already mentioned already, that California is going to be a hot spot. I truly believe Oakland's going to make a big-time move. And we all know what Billy Bean is capable of. The last time that they made a big-season trade was when they traded for John Lester, ended up costing him Yoenis Cespedes, and it didn't end up well for him as they ended up losing in a wild card. But I think Oakland has learned from their mistakes, especially last year. They tried boosting their bullpen to shorten the game, and it only got them so far. So I think Oakland has a really good chance of landing a splashy rotational starter. Keep looking at the list, and the Dodgers are definitely going to make a move for a bullpen arm, as they've been trying. And I think the most activity that's going to happen is going to be out here on the West Coast, because Boston is in this limbo where they don't really know what they want to do yet, because they're about a game behind in the wild card, and they're so far behind the Yankees. And I do think the Yankees, speaking of them, they're going to have to make a move for a starting pitcher. They have the highest ERA in terms of their starting rotation in the entire league since the All-Star break. They're not going to be able to go through the postseason without making a move. I don't know how big of a name it'll be. It could be someone as big as Robbie Ray, Matthew Boyd, Noah Syndergaard, or it could be someone as low as I mentioned before, Tanner Roark, or one of the low-end guys. But the Yankees are going to make a move. They think they're championship contenders this season, and they're going to definitely make something happen come these next 48 hours.
Danny, do you like the one trade deadline that they've put into practice for this year? And let me ask you that. And then also, once the trade deadline passes on July 31st, here Wednesday, is that it? I mean, there's absolutely no way to move any other players anymore the way there used to be in the past?
Yeah, to answer your second question first, it pretty much is it. And a lot of front office executives are not as happy with that new rule, because it was a little bit more exciting. And there's the thing about this season is that there's so many teams on the fence. The Giants, the Phillies, the Brewers, there's so many different teams that are within 2 to 3 games that they don't know what to do. I mean, you're seeing the Diamondbacks, they've already said they're going to sell, yet they're only 3.5 back in the wild card. So it's just up for their determination. And after this deadline comes, you could see free agent signings, but after that, it's about it. I mean, Eduardo Nunez is a guy that I'm looking at that could sign with a potential contender because he can provide some speed and a little athleticism at the top of a lineup. But other than that, it'll be pretty quiet.
Well, I don't think it'll be quiet between now and Wednesday. Danny, thanks for the insight. Enjoyed it. And look forward to you hosting this show in October of 2021. I'm sure Tony either will work with you or be happy to take the day off. But Scraby and I are definitely going to sit that one out because you're going to win the bet. Padres to the World Series in 2021. You heard it here first. Danny, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Hope we catch up with you down the road.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Appreciate your time.
Yes, good stuff. Danny Vietti from CBS Sports. Loves the Padres. Loves them. 2021. You mind producing a show for him, Scraby, if he wins the
bet? If that's the case, yeah, go for it. I'll do whatever.
I mean, you got to do that,
yeah,
right? You
got
to offer up the show.
Yeah.
If he's right about the Padres being in the World Series, you got to offer up the show.
Yep.
Danny Vietti joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply now at sdccu.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Take off those Monday afternoon naptime thoughts, San Diego.
What an amazing opportunity to influence dozens of people.
It's time for Gwen and Chris to tell you all the best things they saw over the weekend now.
This is going to be cool.
On 97.3, The Fan.
All right, Tony, I don't know if I'm the only one that thought this was a really good thing because it happened against the Padres, so I can understand why people might not find it to be that enjoyable. But I grew up in an era when Carl Yastrzemski was a god.
Yeah.
And to see a kid, his grandson, come out here with the name Yastrzemski on his back, go 4 for 5, almost 5 for 5, came up a little short on a home run bid in his last at bat, played some great ball, defense, running the bases. I know it's against the Padres. I know I'm not supposed to like it. But it was fun to see something like that. I wish Willie Mays' grandkid played and Hank Aaron's and Johnny Bench's and all of them, because it just kind of keeps the whole thing alive.
Yeah, and you see a whole bunch of that around the league. Toronto is going to have 3 former big league sons on their major league roster. So I think that's always a good thing. On the darker side of that, though.
Yeah.
The Padres did have a rough weekend against the Giants, losing 2 out of 3 in the series. And it's becoming pretty evident that there is something in the works, it looks to me. The way that we've seen different guys come up, get a couple innings here and there, young guys. I just feel like there's something on the horizon as far as the Padres making a move. Not sure what it is yet, but I won't be surprised if we hear their name.
I think the fact that they've sunk to where they've sunk just kind of gets you to a point where you feel like, you, even for your fan base, you have to say, hey, we're doing something here. Even though you don't want to change the direction you're headed, you think you're headed in a good direction, but right now it's hard to see through all that. I totally agree with you. They have dropped 7 one-run games since the All-Star break, by the way. So as bad as it seems with a 4-11 record, 7 one-run losses. I mean, it's not like they're just completely getting boat raced out there. They're just, it's one thing it seems like every day, and it's either the pitching or the relief or the hitting or the base running or the defense, and it's just a tough stretch.
I think that's a sign that the Padres are what we thought they are. This team is close. I mean, it's not as though they're getting beat by 4 or 5 runs. They're one-run games, one mistake here, a bad pitch here, not getting a guy over there, and you run 7 straight one-run games. I believe it was Friday. I wasn't here with you guys, but I believe it was Friday that the Clippers held their press conference with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George.
Do you want to do an imitation of Steve Ballmer?
Yeah! Let's go! He was pumped up. And you know what?
Get excited! Get excited!
Even though I am not a Clipper fan, I can't do nothing but respect Steve Ballmer.
You got to do that.
Because he just wants to go out and put a good product on the court. And not only that, he actually lets us know he enjoys it. It's not as though he's trying to pretend like he's this owner that has to like be behind the scenes. No, he's one of the richest people in the world.
Doesn't he feel like a guy you could go up and say hello to, which is
100%.
Unlike most owners?
100%. I feel like I could go have a beer with him if I wanted at the bar.
And he'd probably make you pay. That's why he's so rich. Speaking of the Clippers, I definitely know that Saturday night, Kawhi Leonard was here.
He was here, yes.
And got a great ovation. They put him up on the scoreboard. He was hanging out with Jerome Castleberry. I always find that funny. Castleberry was a backup to the backup to the backup point guard on the team that Kawhi Leonard played on. It's always interesting to me that the superstar of the team, Kawhi Leonard, who's gone on to NBA greatness, is best buddies or friends with a guy that was like the third string backup. That happens on a lot of teams, doesn't it?
That happens a lot, to where guys who may not be at the forefront, may not even play that much, they're the guys that a lot of the superstars enjoy being around,
right?
Because they treat them as normal people. And I think there's a sense of a familiarity when you hang out with somebody who's not putting you on a pedestal, is not afraid to chop you down when you need to be chopped down.
Yep.
And all of us need it from time to time, no doubt. But yes, I did catch that out in my trip in Utah. Let me give a shout out to my daughter's Force soccer team.
Hey, let's get a round of applause for that.
She was borrowed this weekend for one of the teams in that Force organization. They go to Utah and they win the whole thing.
Nice! Whole deal? Did you get to carry the trophy on the plane ride home?
Nope. It's not about me. I let my daughter enjoy that. And,
that's awesome.
She played well in the whole matter, so it was definitely worth the trip to go to Utah.
Congratulations to her. All right, Scraby's been dreading this, but I got to bring it up.
Give it to him.
Who won the St. Jude golf tournament yesterday? I got to be honest with you. I didn't even know that Brooks Koepka was playing.
I just saw his name pop up on the bottom
line. All I saw was last night that he won a tournament that was not a major. And according to our golfing expert Scraby, Brooks Koepka doesn't even play in any tournaments that aren't majors.
That's true. He doesn't practice.
Apparently, he does play in them, and he beat Rory McIlroy heads up in the final round.
His guy, Rory McIlroy.
So just to twist the knife a little more, Brooks Koepka continues to show why he's my all-time favorite golfer. Come on, this guy's fantastic, Scraby. And the fact that you don't like him drives me crazy, but I think it's just hilarious.
He would tell you he's a baseball player in khakis and a polo.
Oh, my God. Number one, it's not a regular tour stop. It was a World Golf Championship.
So it doesn't count?
Well, it does count. It's one step below a major. The top
semantics.
50 golfers.
Semantics.
Yeah, I know. You keep trying.
Number
with
two,
this.
Chris actually never texted me on the weekend, and he texted me yesterday to tell me about it. And I got it, and I legitimately had to cool down a little bit because I was going to say, some ridiculous
I know he
text
didn't text
back.
Me back for like an hour. It took him that long to relax.
All right, I will say I'm done with my Brooks Koepka bashing.
No, you don't have to be. It's just that the more you do it, the worse it makes you look.
Unfortunately,
the thing is, he's not going to be able to control it.
If
we're on a group text with him, he just randomly will throw out stuff that's bothering him. He's not going to be able to contain himself. Well, one more thing for me. MLB trade deadline right around the corner. We've already seen some action. The guy I thought the Padres would have would be great for the Padres goes to the Mets. I don't get Marcus Stroman to the Mets at all. I guess the word is they want to win in 2020. They're aiming for that. That's also with the Padres deadline, and Noah Syndergaard continues to be a name that's floating around the Padres.
Well, if they want to win in 2020, trading Noah Syndergaard's not going to help them.
This is, according to what I read, this is a separate thing. Like, they consider it basically a replacement for Noah Syndergaard. But then again, they just recently, they traded just Jason Vargas to the Phillies. So they are, I don't know what the Mets are doing, and I'm not sure they know
They don't know what they're doing. They honestly are a mess. I actually saw somebody take a stab at it and say, well, they just got Marcus Stroman to try and keep him away from the Yankees. And I'm thinking, what in the world would they do that for? The Yankees aren't
even
in the same league. The Mets are a disaster. You know what? The Padres may want to call about Noah Syndergaard. They might be able to get him for a box of popcorn if the Mets aren't paying attention.
Yeah, so, no doubt.
All right, last thing for me. I just wanted to honor one of the great San Diego athletes of all time who passed away over the weekend. Running back Keith Lincoln passed away at the age of 80. And if you don't know that name, old-time San Diego Charger fans will never forget it, because in the 1963 AFL championship game, the Chargers won their only championship. Keith Lincoln totaled 329 yards from scrimmage.
Wow.
Running, receiving, and returning. One of the greatest games ever put together by a Charger running back, and that includes LT and all the rest of them. So rest in peace, Keith Lincoln. Thanks for the memories. Wanted to definitely get that in.
Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, live here at Petco Park. The 4:30 segment.
So nice to be back together again.
It
I missed
is.
You over the weekend, even though I'm glad your daughter had so much success in the big soccer tournament in
they
Utah.
Did. They
That's
did.
Awesome. Was she a goal scorer, or was it a defensive effort, or just some nifty passing?
She was a little bit of everything.
All
she
right.
scored a goal in the first game.
What a feeling.
And then from that point on, she was just a playmaker.
Everything was gravy.
Right. I mean, she played very, very well.
That's so exciting.
This is that point in time of our show where we hand it over to Scrabe.
We do.
Here's a big five for you.
I guess you don't have to.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwynn and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls, you fire!
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The big five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
You know, I think promoting my Twitter handle to give me subject ideas for the Big Five is backfiring on me, because I can't even tell you how many people reached out yesterday when Brooks Koepka won. It was over and over and over and over and over again. So,
well, let me just ask you something. Are people tweeting you to share in your disappointment?
No.
Or are they
no.
tweeting you to just...
Tell me I'm an idiot.
Tell you you're an idiot.
Yes, and that's
okay,
fine.
I got a quick note for all your... Tweeters out there.
Tweeters.
He already knows he's an idiot. You don't need to send him stuff. You know when you're fighting against the greatness of Brooks Koepka that you're fighting an uphill battle.
In this particular case, you are correct. I do know I'm fighting an uphill battle. Doesn't change my feelings about him.
Alright.
Doesn't change my feelings. But if you do want to give me a topic, at Matt Scraby on Twitter, let's get to number five.
That's funny.
Number five.
Brooks Koepka wins and Scraby's Twitter account blows up.
And seriously, like, no joke, in the middle of this, like, I'll call it the tweet storm, I get a text from Chris that just sent me over the edge. Just sent me over the edge.
I had to do it.
Did you know that Brooks Koepka won? Yes, I knew.
Okay?
I didn't say, did you know he won? I can tell you exactly what I said.
That's how I read it, though.
I know.
That's
I didn't
how
say
I read
it.
Like all right. Yankees longtime shortstop Derek Jeter is likely to enter the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum next year when he's listed on the Hall of Fame ballot for the first time, but there might be two familiar faces missing from the audience. Hall of Famers Andre Dawson and Tony Perez told Bleacher Reports and friend of the show Scott Miller they're considering boycotting Jeter's induction ceremony. Jeter fired both Dawson and Perez from their special assistant positions with the Miami Marlins when his ownership group took over in September 2017. Dawson said to Scott Miller, quote, I sincerely doubt that I will attend at this point. All indications are likely not. I can't speak for Tony, but I don't have a sense or feeling like I want to sit on that stage to hear what Jeter has to say. Tony Perez, on the other hand, said, quote, it wasn't nice what happened at the end. For me, it was more than insult. Personally, the way everything was handled, even with the kind of offer they made going forward, I just felt disrespected in a sense. I have a lot of pride. For me, that's kind of where I'm at with the whole process. It is what it is. I understand going forward, it's a decision they made. It's their money, their team, but I've got to look out for my pride and welfare also. So, Tony, you're up first. And is this a jerk move to not go, or do they have a point?
I don't know if it's I don't think it's a jerk move. I don't know if there's a point that needs to be made, right? I think ultimately there's some feelings hurt and how it was handled. I don't necessarily think these guys are upset that they were fired. I mean, they probably are upset that they were fired, but I think they recognize that this is a business. I think they're upset about the way they were fired. And You know, with those type of situations comes hurt feelings and animosity sometimes. And I don't necessarily think it's wrong for them to have those feelings. And if this is how they choose to express themselves as far as, you know, not wanting to go to Derek Jeter's induction, they're well within their right. Had they not been employees for the Marlins, would they go to the Hall of Fame induction?
Probably, you know, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know that. There's guys every year that don't necessarily go in attendance. This year was the most that attended, most Hall of Famers that had attended the Hall of Fame. So it's not something that guys have to go. And there's been plenty of guys that missed before him. I think this one has a little bit more because of the simple fact that these guys worked for Derek.
Chris, what do you think?
I'm trying to think back when we were at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown last year. I don't recall, not that we saw everybody, but I don't recall seeing Tony Perez or Andre Dawson.
Yeah,
so
they weren't.
I don't know that they always go. They could have just not shown up, but I think that they really wanted to make a point here. So they wanted to come out of the media and say, you know what, not only are we not going to show up, we're going to tell you that we're not going to show up. We're not pleased with, you know, the way things went down with the Marlins. I'll be honest with you. If I'm Derek Jeter, I'm hoping a lot of Yankee fans show up at Cooperstown to see me go into the Hall of Fame. And I hope no Marlin fans come at all, because I can't imagine there's too many Marlin fans that are thrilled with the direction of that franchise right now. But to your question, I can understand it. I mean, yeah. If somebody fired you, it's kind of hard to go now to a dinner that's being held in their honor and stand up and applaud when they come up to
the... Oh, you're a great guy. Great
yeah.
guy.
If you know. Adam fired all of us, would we go to his birthday party?
Yes, Adam, I would, but not anybody else.
I would buy the most expensive present, too.
Yes, we'd all pool together and get a nice...
Adam, I'm not going
something.
If you fire me. I'm just telling you straight
Tony's
up.
Tony's the only honest
I am
one
not
here.
Going.
Yeah, I think this makes perfect sense. You get fired by a guy, why would you want to go to his celebration?
Right.
I totally get what Dawson and Perez are saying.
All right, let's go to number four.
Number four.
Do you guys know who Pat McAfee is?
Yes, the kicker. Former kicker.
Punter who could tackle
former
people.
Punter.
Yes. So, yeah, you guys got it right. I'm pretty surprised. He's the former punter for the Colts and was a broadcaster for NFL on Fox for two games last year. Well, he is now the Thursday night college football analyst for ESPN, and he's going to be joining Matt Hasselbeck, Adam Amin, and Molly McGrath for the broadcast. McAfee has tried stand-up comedy, other sports media outlets, and now is a permanent fixture, at least for this year, on ESPN. Here he is on NFL on Fox during a Lions-Packers game last year.
Matt Prater has the NFL's longest field goal. He's a man who's a legend. He's kicked long balls, he's kicked game winners, and here in Lambeau in December, gives a cadence with a leg lift like Peyton Manning, no laces, and delivers a dime in the corner of the end zone.
Chris, what do you think makes a good broadcaster these days?
Well, one thing, you talked about how he's dabbled in comedy. Don't take the comedy act with you into the booth.
You just heard the clip, and he did that.
Yeah, it's not the best move. Dennis Miller didn't make it as a comedian in the Monday Night Football booth. I love Dennis Miller. I think he's very funny. I didn't tune in to watch football, though, to hear jokes. If you say something that organically is funny, then I have no problem with that. And I like, you know, for example, I'll just use Mark Grant. I mean, he's hilarious, you know, on the Padre broadcast, but he doesn't sit there and write jokes out.
No.
It's all very organic. So what makes a good color analyst is what you're asking?
Yeah.
Obviously, just an interesting knowledge of the game and an ability to pass that information along to the viewer in a way that they can understand it and not feel like they're being talked down to. That's the best I can come
Tony's
up with for my
standing
definition.
Standing applause or sitting
that
applause.
That is the perfect explanation.
Do you have anything to add?
I agree with Chris. I think, you know, having if it's organic, it comes off as part of the broadcast.
Right.
If it's a punchline, it's almost like, were you writing jokes before the show started so that you could make us laugh? We're not here to laugh. We're here to be entertained and watch some football is what we're here for.
Have you heard Pat McAfee in longer stretches than that clip? Because, you know, in the clip he was like, oh, look, and he goes and passes it to Peyton Manning. He's lifting his leg like Peyton Manning kind of thing. Like, have you had him or heard him before?
I haven't. I haven't.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to give a real.
I couldn't give a fair assessment.
A fair assessment of him, but you know, I think Matt Hasselbeck on there does an all right job, and the play-by-play guy's fine. Let me tell you something. Whatever they're doing on Thursday night on ESPN College Football,
it's not going to do anything.
It's going to kill whatever they're doing on Monday Night Football for the NFL.
Oh, I thought you were saying like they're going up against the NFL on Thursday night. It's kind of a weird thing to make.
No,
a
I'll
big
be watching. Hey, I watch Central Michigan play.
No, you do not. Maction, as our old pal Will used to say, Maction.
Maction. Yeah.
All right.
Number three.
I hate this so much. A teenager from Pennsylvania won $3 million and took home the top prize at the 2019 Fortnite World Cup on Sunday. Kyle Bugga Giersdorf scored 26 more points than runner-up Psalm. His name is Psalm. To win the esports tournament held at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, where they play the Tennis U.S. Open. Quote, words can't even explain it. I'm just so happy. Everything I've done, the grind, it's all paid off. It's just insane. End quote. According to CNET, the team of Emil Berquist Peterson and David Aqua W won the two-person championship Saturday, which includes $3 million in prize money. That's more than the winner at Wimbledon, Indy 500, and pretty much all the golf majors out there. So, Tony, should they be paid more than professional athletes to win this Fortnite World Cup?
They're professionals. They may not be athletes, but...
16-year-old?
They're professionals. They're professionals at gaming. I am not going to knock it. They didn't just come up with this money out of the sky. I can tell you that. There's been sponsors that put into this. They found a way to be able to pay these guys. And believe it or not, and sometimes I can't believe it, there's a market for this. People, my kids, will watch somebody else play video games. This is the most crazy thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Yeah,
but
right?
Kids around the nation are doing this. Like, we watch sports. They get a kick out of watching other kids play video
games.
Crazy. So, hey, I'm not going to knock it. Kudos to those guys for being able to find an avenue to make a boatload of cash. And I think it's cool.
Chris, what do you think?
Get off my lawn. There has to come a time where I draw the line. Come on. No, I'm just kidding. I've watched some of this stuff on television.
You haven't. Really? I haven't even watched this.
All right, not for very long, because honestly, it's hard for me to figure out what's going on.
Yes.
I know that, you know, they show on the screen a guy with a gun, and he's just killing people. I don't know that this is the greatest entertainment we could come up with for our younger generation of, quote, sports viewers.
Yeah.
But Tony's right, though. If they can raise that much money to pay them that kind of money to win, then more power to them. I mean, believe me, Wimbledon would love to pay out more if they could just raise the money
they
for the
bring
tennis
that
tournament.
Kind of revenue in,
yeah. I mean, you know, look, the king and queen are not going to pay up, but or Harry and Kate
Middleton
aren't going to pay up. But if they could raise more sponsorship money, they would pay it. So to that extent, I mean, Tony's right. Whether you or I or anyone listening has ever watched this or thinks it's, quote, a sport or an event, whatever, and doesn't care, hey, there's plenty of people who do.
Yeah.
And I will go back to when the Winter X Games started out. I thought, all right, this is a nice little niche thing that a few people will like. And, you know, they'll televise it on on the Ocho.
You know, on the Ocho, yeah, exactly.
And people will, you know, do these flips and turns and spins. Hey, I still don't find it to be all that big of a deal, personally. But I know one thing, it's now in the Olympic Games.
It is.
I mean, there's that many people that do this all over the world, and I will say that they're very good at it. It still doesn't really interest me, but that's neither here nor there. There's obviously enough interest to raise that kind of money for these guys to make $3 million, so...
Not that the royal marriages are your expertise. I just want to let you know that Harry is married to Meghan Markle.
That's what I meant.
And Kate Middleton is married to William.
I'm not actually disappointed that I got that wrong.
Meghan Markle's gorgeous.
That doesn't
she
really,
sure is.
It doesn't
so make, is Kate Middleton.
It doesn't bother me that I got that wrong. By the way, just one last thing on this, though, is the fact that this happens, does this give kids a little cachet to go into their parents and go, but Mom, I'm just practicing to be a professional video game player.
It does.
And look, these guys made $3 million.
I was that kid. Even though there was no video game league out there, I was saying, hey, one day you never know. But my time was a little
early. That didn't go over.
It's still mind-blowing to me that you want to watch somebody else play video games.
I know, me too.
It just makes, it's backwards, it's a bizarro world.
I completely agree, 100%. All right, moving on.
Number two.
49ers general manager John Lynch said last week that Jimmy G, the quarterback of the 49ers, has been cleared to play after tearing his ACL last season and missing almost a whole year. Lynch said that he doesn't think Jimmy G would play in preseason week one and maybe not at all in the preseason. So, Chris, is it a good or bad idea not to play Jimmy G in the preseason?
First of all, I got to ask, who is Jimmy G? Is that
Jimmy
the same
Jesus,
as
sorry.
Jimmy Jesus?
Yes, same guy. Thank you. Same guy. All right, but I feel like I have to remove the title from
no,
him.
No, I needed to
Jesus
know.
Jesus doesn't tear his ACL.
Because Jimmy G is Jimmy G is
very
not,
accurate.
Jimmy G is not a credible NFL player. Jimmy Jesus, on the other hand, is heading to the Hall of Fame. So I need to make sure we're talking about one and the same guy. No, I look. Don't get me started on how ridiculous the NFL preseason is. You know, I mean, I'm looking forward to the Hall of Fame game coming up Thursday night just because there'll be a football game on television, but I'll only watch it for a minute just to check it out. The preseason, I've said it many times, it's the biggest sham in all of American sports, and the fact that people have to pay full freight to go see these games and they have to buy these tickets on top of their season ticket packages is something honestly Congress ought to get involved in this and just not let football owners do this and charge this kind of money to these fans.
It is ridiculous.
We'll go out on a limb and say they have enough issues to deal with on their own.
No, thank you.
Your limb is absolutely correct, but I'm just saying if they have any free time, I want Nancy Pelosi or somebody to call the NFL. But no, so playing in the preseason or not doesn't mean anything. To get ready for the season, Jimmy Jesus, everybody, every quarterback, they're going to get it done in practice and with reps and working out. You know, you get a little taste of a game, but I'd be inclined to keep almost all my key guys out of these games.
Tony, what do you think?
I think for the first time today, Chris and I disagree on something.
Ooh.
I only say this because Jimmy G just missed all of last season. And for his first game to be in a regular season game, I think might be a little bit risky. I mean, this training camp isn't what it used to be, right? Full contact, full pads, all of that. You know, now they wear the pads, but they don't have shorts on. You know, it's a different type of training camp. And I'm not sure that it's a safe thing to put Jimmy Jesus out on the field for the first time off of what, torn ACL, or was it Achilles? No, it was ACL, right?
ACL, yeah.
ACL with that type of fast-paced game. I would at least get him a few snaps in the preseason so that he can get his feet wet. I know it's not the same, but at least they're going full bore. And he could kind of test that knee
that
out.
That guy's running around
right.
you.
Because that's what I think the biggest thing for quarterbacks, especially with knee issues, is guys falling around their feet and being comfortable with it. Do you really want the first time that to happen to be in a regular season game where there's only what, 16 of these games, that, and you got to make them all count?
I think the one thing that somebody might say is, well, what if he gets hurt playing in the preseason? To that, I say that's just ludicrous. If he's going to get hurt playing in a preseason game, chances are he'd probably get hurt in his first regular season game anyway. So, you know, he's got to test out the leg. I you know, to a point, you're right. I just my thing is just the overall annoyance with preseason football.
Not a fan.
And the fact that you get excited because your team is running out onto the field and you see some of the players that you recognize and they take them all away from you before you can even settle in. It's just kind of crazy.
The thing that always bothers me, like the whole one series thing. Like, why even play? You came out there for literally three plays. It was fourth down. You punt it. Now
honestly,
you're done.
You could be a quarterback and hand off three times and be done for the day.
Stats 0-0 with no yards, no attempts, none of that.
And everybody makes such a big deal out of everything that happens in these games. A guy runs a 70-yard touchdown run. They're ready to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
It's like, hang on a second. And the other thing is announcers. Get this memo from your Uncle Chris Ello here. Stop telling me in a preseason game that Kyler Murray just threw his first professional touchdown pass. Because you know what?
It does
he
not
didn't.
Count.
It doesn't count. But they say it every single time when a rookie comes in. Oh, here's Kyler Murray's first ever pro. No, it's not his first pro touchdown pass. He still has zero.
If you're not counting it towards his career numbers, stop counting it.
Exactly.
All right. You guys got that out?
Yes.
Let's go to number one.
Number one.
Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green had a tough injury over the weekend. He was carted off the field after injuring his ankle and should miss about 6 to 8 weeks. He's not supposed to be back before the regular season. It was ligament injury. It wasn't a sprain or anything, but they're saying that he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. And then I just read something that one of the players on the field said, or on the field when it happened, said that the practice field was not very good, and that could be considered as to a reason why he did that. So, Tony, could A.J. Green be considered injury prone at this point in his career?
The facts bear it out a little bit. I hate to call guys injury prone. I really, really do, because I've been through injuries before, and nobody is out seeking to get injured. But
and you didn't want anybody calling you.
No,
that when
I certainly didn't. Right. So, but the fact is, he's been injured. I think the last three seasons at different points. Where major injuries. I think he missed the second half of last season.
He did, and he missed six games in 2016.
That's a big portion of your schedule that you don't have your very best player on the squad. So I would say he has been injury prone as of late. I think that's the best way to
put
it.
That is a good way to put it.
And the problem with it, though, is he's having injuries to things that he definitely needs, right? These aren't like broken fingers. These are like a broken foot, a torn tendon in his foot, torn tendon in his Achilles. So those are big issues for a guy whose game is revolved around speed. You kind of need those feet to be 100%.
Chris?
If I'm not mistaken, the Cincinnati Bengals have not won a playoff game since 1988. That is the longest stretch in the National Football League.
Something like that.
So I'm not going to say that he's injury prone. I'm going to say the fact that he plays for the Bengals means he's cursed.
I wish I could have said that.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, these poor Bengals, I mean, they need everything they can get. And, you know, it's interesting. It was maybe 10 years ago with Carson Palmer. The Bengals had really had a really nice team. Won the division, beat the Steelers, were on their way in the playoffs. First round game against the Steelers, who happened to be the wild card that year. And Carson Palmer throws a touchdown on the very first play of the game. They're up 7-0.
This is against the Steelers?
Yeah, and the Bengals are going to roll. And then the next thing that happens, the guy rolls up on Carson's knee. He's out of the game. They, of course, lose that game. The Steelers go on and win the Super Bowl that year. And the Bengals haven't been heard from since. Certain franchises are just cursed. And I don't think A.J. Green's necessarily any more injury prone than anybody else would be at the NFL level. Yeah. I mean, it's a dangerous sport you're playing. But the Bengals have had their share of misfortune, and this is just another one.
All right. Good stuff, guys.
You've survived another edition of the Big Five on 97.3 The Fan.
Bring us back from break.
You're listening to the smooth tunes of Gwynn and Chris. Chris.
Who?
I don't know. Chris, apparently. Your name is Chris now.
I don't know what's going on with my mouth right now.
I was doing so good. Welcome back, everybody.
The smooth tunes of Gwynn and Chris. Welcome back. 97.3, The Fin.
Embarrassing. I am so embarrassing.
Gwynn and Chris is brought to you by our friends at Sonic Drive-Ins here in San Diego. The burgers, the hot dogs, the chili dogs, the tater tots, especially. I don't want to say especially the tater tots, because then that kind of seems like everything else is. But the tater tots are so good. You got to give them a little extra special mention. Great drinks, everything you could possibly want. 8 locations around town, Sonic. So Google Sonic San Diego. Find the location nearest you. Thank you to Sonic. We're at Petco Park. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Tony Gwynn Jr., Gwynn and Chris. Tony is getting set for his TV gig tonight. He's back on television.
Mm-hmm.
And the Padres are going to go after the Baltimore Orioles tonight.
Baltimore.
The Orioles got to be ecstatic, even though it's like 90 degrees here in San Diego, because it's not 500 degrees humidity like it would be in Baltimore. So
no joke.
They got to be enjoying this little breeze that's coming through Petco Park. John Hess? No.
David?
John Hess, I think, is an author. David Hess is going to be the starting pitcher tonight for the Baltimore Orioles. He's going to try and author a fine performance against Chris Paddock.
That tonight. Was really good.
Thank you.
Going from a
thank
an
you very
author
little.
To a nice little wordplay there.
Thank you very little. Will Myers is in the lineup again. Fourth game in a row that Will Myers is starting.
He hit a home run yesterday.
I know.
He had three hits over
he
the weekend.
He had two doubles on Saturday night. You know, the fans are just so down on Will Myers, but as I've said many times, he's still on this roster. He's still on your team. So why would you root against him?
You have said that.
You know what I'm saying? It's like everybody roots against Will Myers. Why? If he gets traded somewhere, then you can root against him. But as long as he's on this team, you might as well at least hope he does well.
Exactly.
Silly. Makes no sense to me.
Why would you want someone who's on your team to do bad? That's like rooting for someone in your workplace to do bad that hurts the company or something. It's weird. I don't get it.
I do often wonder sometimes about how athletes, like if you're in a, let's say you're in kind of a position battle, like in football. Like you're the starting linebacker.
Okay.
And the second string guy and you are pretty close and you got the job. And then you get nicked up and you miss a couple of games and this guy's going to get to take your spot. Well, if he does well, that's good for your team. But if he does really well, that's bad for you. So I always wonder, how do you handle that? How do you couch that? Do you root for the guy? Or do you kind of quietly sit behind your helmet over on the sidelines and go, oh, well.
I'll be honest.
This guy's playing really well. I don't like this.
I'll be honest. With my first radio thing ever on the radio, someone got sick, and I was happier than could be that person got sick.
Yeah.
Because I was just sitting there waiting.
And you didn't bring him any chicken soup?
No. I was like, oh, yeah, feel better, never come back, please.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but that's I think a lot of people wouldn't admit that.
You got to look out for number one, though.
Yeah, you're always looking out for number one, which means in baseball, which is such an individual sport, Will Myers has had to sit there for the better part of a month and root for Manuel Margot to make an out every time, which is totally against everything you're supposed, you know,
you're
kind of taught to do, which is to root for your team and support your teammates. But if Manuel Margot were hitting 500 this month, Will Myers wouldn't even be getting these playing opportunities.
Absolutely right.
So it's kind of weird. All right, countdown time. Speaking of things we don't like,
it's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is the countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, today's countdown, sports figures you love to hate. We're gonna need like a top 50 for this one.
I've been, you can see my sheet. Look at how many people are scratched out my sheet.
I'm a little disappointed, like, in my list, because it just seems like I don't really dislike these guys enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But some of them belong.
You want me to go first?
Sure. Okay. You go first.
Number five,
sports figures, players, athletes, teams, etc.
Owners.
That we hate.
My number five used to be my number one.
Really?
Now he's moved back because of one reason. And my number five is Richard Sherman, because I'm a 49ers fan, and I always have been a 49ers fan. And when Richard Sherman did the thing on the field after they beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship, when he got interviewed by Aaron Andrews, and she was like, he's talking about you. He said, Crabtree, you're going to mess with the best. That made me so mad because I was so emotional that the 49ers just lost. And here's Richard Sherman calling out 49er Nation in front of everyone. And since then, I have hated the guy.
I know, but he made Aaron Andrews really uncomfortable.
He did.
For that, I give him some brownie points.
I was even afraid watching from my couch at home because he was so crazy. But now that he's on the 49ers, you know, I was a big-time hater of that move of putting Richard Sherman on the team. So my number five, Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman. All right. He's certainly a polarizing figure. That is to be sure. Number five for me, Chris Paul.
I knew this guy was going to be on your
list.
Did
you know he was going to be on there?
I knew, but I'm surprised it's five. I thought it would have been at least two.
I'm not a Chris Paul fan. I never have been, and he's never given me any reason to be. I've never honestly heard a nice thing uttered about Chris Paul by one of his former or current teammates. Seems like the Houston Rockets could not wait to get rid of him. Seemed like the team he got traded to, the Oklahoma City Thunder, immediately wanted to trade him, but they can't because they can't find anybody who wants him. I mean, a feud with James Harden, a feud in L.A. with the Clippers, and just kind of a royal pain in the you-know-what when he's on the court. He just never has a good look to me. I don't root for Chris Paul in any way, shape, or form. Do I think he's a pretty good player? I will say that, yes, he's a fairly good player. Well, pretty good. Yeah, he's a good player. But not good enough for me to want to put up with him.
Yes.
Right. Number four.
That's a good one. We should say we're doing this because of my hatred for Brooks Koepka and winning.
That's what made me think about it, yeah.
We're not just randomly calling out athletes for
this. Yes, when Brooks Koepka won the golf tournament yesterday, I knew that Scraby would be livid because he can't stand Brooks Koepka. So I thought that it would be fun to do a list of guys.
All right, number four for me is LeBron James.
Really?
Yes.
You love to hate LeBron James?
Yeah, because I used to really love him, but everywhere he goes, he just does. He leaves a wake. Like when he left Miami, he left a wake. When he left Cleveland the first time, he left a wake. He gets coaches fired. He even got a director fired off of Space Jam 2.
Well,
if it's not LeBron's way, it's the highway, and I don't like that.
I've never really totally felt that, although I can't say for sure that that's not true.
And I mean, I know he gets a lot of grief for the decision when he made his decision to go to Miami.
That was when he was at his all-time low point.
Yes.
When he did that, that's his popularity was at an all-time low.
And I actually liked him back then, but he's slowly changed into it's really? My way or the highway.
Interesting. All right. Number four for me, well, if we're going to talk about big-name athletes that are among the greatest in the history of their sports, I might as well put Tiger Woods on my list at number four.
I knew this was going to be on your list.
Tiger Woods. I think I've kind of been clear on why I'm not a Tiger fan over the years.
Yeah,
I was probably the only sports fan anywhere in this country that was not thrilled when he won the Masters this year. I did not want to see him win another one. Although to a lot of people, that's the greatest story of this entire sports year.
I was watching some highlights yesterday of the Masters, and I was like, I still can't believe Tiger Woods won the Masters.
How did he win that?
No
he
idea.
Can't even lift a golf club.
Yeah, no
Number
idea.
Number three.
Like, if his wife hit him with a golf club right now, he wouldn't be able to hit her back.
Well, he shouldn't hit her back anyway.
I'm aware of that. Thank you,
Okay. My number three is Floyd Mayweather Jr., and the only reason I dislike him is because I don't like guys that flash their money and spend $50,000 on stuff that they don't need, which is what he seems to do all the time.
You'd rather him give the money to you?
Or someone other than like buying a $40,000 piece of toilet paper or something like that. I was in Houston for the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and we were walking around, and all of a sudden, like nine cars drove by, and we turn around, and it was the Floyd Mayweather money team. So
the money team?
Yeah, I was really annoyed by that just by seeing it.
Who was the first athlete to gain popularity for, quote, making it rain? Wasn't it Floyd Mayweather who
maybe
like took his purse and $1 bills or something like that? I don't remember.
Pac-Man Jones did it when he was with the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, Pac-Man Jones.
And then got suspended for it.
Yeah, there's a guy that would make just about everybody's list. All right, Floyd Mayweather, number three for Scraby. Number three on my list of athletes that I love to hate, Baker Mayfield. He's got a chance to get off this list if he can go out, play some football this year, and shut the bleep up. Because I do think he's got some talent. I do actually kind of like his bravado. I think you have to have a certain amount of bravado to play quarterback in the NFL. I mean, believe me, Tom Brady walks around and thinks he's great. You know?
Yeah.
But Baker Mayfield is walking around thinking he's great before he's done anything.
That's true.
And that's what bugs me about him. Just, you know what? Have a little humility. Go out. Become a real, true, all-pro type player. Then you can pop off like Brett Favre used to do and tell me how great you are, and I won't be able to argue with you.
That's very true.
But until then, Baker Mayfield's on my list, number three.
Number two.
Number two, it's a personal thing for me, and people love him. This is going to take you by surprise. It's Reggie Miller. I cannot stand Reggie Miller because of something he did to me when I was like 8 or 9 years old. In a restaurant in Chicago, we asked the waitress if I could walk up, if she would ask him if I could walk up and get a picture or an autograph or something like that. I remember watching the waitress go over there and asking him. He gave her a look and he said, "Nah, I'm with my ladies," and put his arms around him. I was 8 or 9 years old.
His entourage?
His entourage. So that for the rest of my life, I that would always remember that.
That would break your heart as an 8 or 9 year old kid.
It did.
Obviously right so. You still don't like him all these years later.
We did it the right way, too. We asked the waitress to go ask him if we could approach the table.
All right. Number two for me is not a player. It's not even a sports team. It's not really even a sports figure. It's just three letters that forever will haunt me and that I will forever despise.
What's that?
In this particular order, B, Y,
oh,
U.
You do hate BYU.
I don't like BYU. I never have. I never will. There's nothing that'll change my mind about it. I'm sure most of it stems from the fact that I am an Aztec, but I have some other personal reasons why I'm really just not much of a fan, and I don't care to share all those right now.
Okay.
But BYU's number two on my list, and they're number two with a bullet because they could easily be number one.
All right.
But it's tough to pass the person I have at number one.
All right. I can't wait.
Oh, you know who
idea.
It is.
Do
oh,
I?
Oh, yes, you do.
Number
all right, who's
one.
Your number one?
I thought Chris Paul would have been. My number one is Brooks Koepka. Enough said. Enough said. Enough said.
I honestly think you don't like Brooks Koepka because I like him now. Like, I think that you don't like him and you really wouldn't like him anyway. But the fact that I give you a hard time about not liking him has made you root against him even more.
I think I more so don't like him because he seems like the guy who would have bullied me in high school.
What's the matter with that?
I'd be like, "Hey, Brooks, what's going on, man?
Hey, you're just a dork. Get out of here. Let me give you a wedgie and a swirly."
Perfectly nothing wrong with that
okay.
that I can think of. All right, my number one sports figure that I love to hate, you know this. You could even guess it if I gave you a long enough time.
I'm blanking, honestly. I thought it was Chris Paul.
No. Chris Paul's a distant fifth to this guy. The most unlikable guy in all of sports, Nick Saban.
Oh.
Come on.
I forgot that.
Yes,
now. Yes. Hey, Thomas, I think we have something that contradicts that, though, don't we?
I wanted to congratulate my favorite college football coach, Nick Saban.
See? I mean, how could you hate him and love
what
him?
What was I congratulating
time?
Him for? I don't even remember.
Sarcastically congratulating
yes.
him.
All right. I don't need to go into it. I think I've told everybody how many millions
too.
Of times I despise Nick Saban, and he's easily number one on
Good
my
Good stuff.
List. All right. There's our countdown today.
The countdown is now closed.
All right, we got to get to Odd Thomas. Time to talk some football. AFC West preview. Odd Thomas joins us. Is there any kind of musical interlude to this, or is he just stepping into the program?
You know how we do.
We don't have an open for things.
We never have a good open for a new segment. Odd Thomas, how are you today, buddy?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're good, but enough baseball talk. Let's get to some football, man. I mean, it's the first week of the first game. So it's a good time to break down the AFC West. We got Odd Thomas's AFC West preview. What do you have, sir?
All right, well, we'll start out with the most polarizing team in the division. That is the Oakland Raiders. And since December of 2018, general manager Mike Mayock and second-year head coach John Gruden are treating their Raiders like a work in progress, spending the entire offseason trying to reboot their franchise before the big move to Las Vegas happens next year. The two basically went out and got all new playmakers, signing arguably the top receivers in the league. Antonio Brown, along with star receivers Tyrell Williams, Ryan Grant, and J.J. Nelson, plus tight end Luke Wilson, and adding Alabama running back Josh Jacobs in the first round. Didn't stop there. They signed linebackers Vontaze Burfict, who is coming off kind of an injury that we didn't think he'd play again with the concussions, but he's coming back and says he's in perfect health. And they
and he's a perfect citizen, too.
Yeah, and got a great relationship with Antonio Brown.
yeah, that's right. That could be interesting in and of itself.
So, some of the key losses, like I said, they lost tight end Jared Cook, who went to New Orleans for $15 million. Left guard Kelechi Osemele, who got traded with a sixth-round pick to the New York Jets in exchange for a fifth-round pick. And another offensive lineman, John Feliciano, who agreed to a two-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. But they got Antonio Brown, signed offensive tackle Trent Brown to a huge deal, four-year, $66 million contract. And free safety LaMarcus Joyner, who signed a four-year, $42 million contract with the team. So, some of the biggest storylines coming into the season. Will franchise quarterback Derek Carr find success with his brand new receivers room, or all those new targets going to be too tough to wrangle with this quickly?
Hey, real quick, Thomas, on the Raiders. Is Sebastian Janikowski finally moved on, or is he still kicking?
He finally retired. He was with the Seahawks
moving
last year.
Yeah. I thought I'd seen it. So the Raiders are going to have a new kicker for like the first time in
He was
ages.
On the Seahawks last year.
Yeah, they cut him last year.
They had Giorgio Tavecchio.
You're right. I'm sorry. All right. I'm a year behind on the
Giorgio Tavecchio.
The ouster of Seabass. All right, Thomas. That's a good look at the Raiders. And, of course, we'll see a lot more about the Raiders starting next week with Hard Knocks.
I was just going to say, you think the Hard Knocks, the fact they have Hard Knocks and the last season in Oakland, do you think it's going to affect the team this season?
Oh, yes. Well, the fact that it's the last season in Oakland is going to definitely affect the team. Now, you got to remember that these are just people. They got families. They got to figure out how in the world they're going to get from Oakland to Las Vegas, what they're going to do with their kids. Are they going to stay in Oakland? Are they going to move ahead of time to Las Vegas? It's a huge distraction, and I think that it's going to make it very difficult for them to be successful this year. But I do think Hard Knocks will be really enjoyable because John Gruden knows how to play that up. He knows how to entertain you.
He already did. They already sent out a clip, and he was like, we ain't playing for the Blue Bonnet Bowl. It's
he's going to be funny on Hard Knocks. You can bank
this
that.
Isn't the Gator Bowl.
All right, there's the Raiders. Who's
move on
up?
To the Broncos.
The Broncos!
This offseason, Denver Bronco general manager John Elway called an audible and fired his head coach and both coordinators and his quarterback, then totally restocked the shelves with what he considers better talent. As head coach, he hired Vic Fangio, who's the defensive coordinator from the Chicago Bears, who ranked third in defense, total defense last season. And he made it clear he would be coordinating defenses and calling the all-new defensive plays. And then Rich Scargiello, who was hired to coordinate the offense after spending last season as the quarterback coach of Scrabby's 49ers. Mm. Now, some of the key losses they lost, linebacker Brandon Marshall, who signed with the Raiders, offensive tackle Jared Valdir, who signed with the Patriots, quarterback Bradley Roby, who signed a one-year deal with the Houston Texans, and then added offensive tackle Juwan James, who was actually a pretty good guard for the Dolphins last season.
That's hard to believe.
Oh, come on.
They didn't block anybody the whole season. How could he have been good? Come on.
Signed quarterback Kareem Jackson and brought in Super Bowl MVP quarterback Joe Flacco. So big questions going in. Does Joe Flacco still have it, especially now that he's happy again? Or has he hit the same ineffective level that another former Super Bowl MVP, Eli Manning, has seemed to have?
Yeah, I think more people are leaning toward the latter with Joe Flacco, but he could prove everybody wrong. You wonder who the wide receivers are going to be. They don't have Demaryius Thomas anymore, right?
And Emmanuel Sanders is coming off a torn Achilles.
He's coming off an injury. Right. So Philip Lindsay's going to be a key guy for the Broncos. This is a big year for John Elway. I know that he's got a Super Bowl as an executive, but to me that's more Peyton Manning's Super Bowl
now,
than John Elway's, you know? This is John Elway's chance to really build this team kind of on his own. It's going to be interesting to see if he can really pull it off.
Well, and they're bringing in a first-time head coach who's going to be the head coach of the team, plus going to be calling the defense. So do you think he's going to be overwhelmed or crippled by all the crippled by the details?
Both.
Yeah.
Now, Vic Fangio has been a guy who's been up for a head coaching job for a while.
Yeah,
so
I
think that he is ready to go.
No, he'll be fine if he just was the head coach, but trying to do two things in the NFL, I think that's too much.
That is a lot.
Too much. Not even Belichick is his defensive coordinator.
That's
even
true.
Though he is, he's still not officially.
I think Gerard Mayo might be calling plays for them as the linebacker coach, but he doesn't give the title out very often.
Yeah, interesting.
All right, moving on to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs.
For one hot moment, it looked like the Chiefs were going to go all the way and play in the 2019-20, go all the way to the Super Bowl. But without the league's fastest offense, Tyreek Hill, whose, question was up in the air about what was going to be his suspension, was he not going to be suspended, for how long? But That drama aside, the Chiefs with the third-year quarterback, last year's MVP, Patrick Mahomes, under center. Receivers like Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and all-pro tight end Travis Kelce as his targets, once again expected to win the AFC West outright, which can't surprise anyone who watched them overcome within an overtime loss of last year's Super Bowl winning team. So Andy Reid went out and it had to improve the Chiefs' 31st ranked defense by trading some veteran players and adding some help with Emmanuel Ogba, traded from the Browns, and getting Frank Clark at defensive end from the Seahawks. And
they're excited about him.
Yes, and signing the Honey Badger. So, some of the key losses now. Eric Berry, who has been the staple of that Chiefs team, same with Justin Houston and D. Ford.
But Eric Berry's not healthy anymore, so.
No.
I think they, you know, the Chiefs should be a little better on defense, but I think they got to be a lot better. And I know they came close to the Super Bowl, but it is so hard to get there just on offense. It truly is. Mahomes was off the charts last year. Really, is he going to throw another 50 touchdowns? I mean, if he can do that again, I'd have to give him huge props. But that's so hard to do. And Tyreek Hill has to be a question mark as well.
I think the league has it out for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and I think that everybody's going
to... The league has it out for them? What does that mean?
Like, we want to stop you. Every team that's going to play him doesn't want to be put on the sidearm Patrick Mahomes play.
On the Patrick Mahomes video montage.
So, yeah, I don't think they want to be part of that. A
couple storylines to look out. So now defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, who is most famously known for stopping the Patriots 18-0 or 19-0 Super Bowl, they're going to be switching from a 3-4, which they've been for a handful of seasons, now to a 4-3. And will Patrick Mahomes have his sophomore slump, even though he's a third-year player? And how will the Tyreek Hill situation play out this whole season?
Yeah, I mean, if Tyreek Hill so much as glances at somebody in the wrong direction, he's going to be suspended. So
true.
That's something you got to be worried about. And, of course, you don't have Kareem Hunt anymore, and I don't know that they have anybody to fill that spot. They've got some running backs, but not that dynamic.
They got local grad Mira Mesa High School, Damian Williams.
And I love Damian, believe me, but he's not Kareem Hunt.
He beat me in fantasy this year.
Damian did?
Yeah, for Ron Davis.
It's amazing we have these memories of one fantasy guy having a big game and beating you. All right, before we get to the Chargers, Thomas, let's pause very quickly for station identification. You're listening to the Padres Radio Network.
KWFN-FM and KWFN-HD1 San Diego. Radio.com sports station.
This is Will Myers from the San Diego Padres.
The Padres play here.
Crushed at a half, Will. Two-run home run, 11-0.
The Padres play here on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Gwynn and Chris, and Padre Baseball in just a few minutes. But wrapping up our AFC West preview with Odd Thomas and the Los Angeles used to be SD Chargers. What do you got, Thomas?
Well, from the looks of the Chargers' sparse offseason moves, general manager Tom Telesco seems content with his current roster, and why not? It includes a potential Hall of Fame quarterback, two-time Pro Bowler Melvin Gordon, and two-time Pro Bowler Keenan Allen. Tough though when your team goes 12-4 and has to settle for a wild card spot in the playoffs, but that's the reality of the Bolts sharing a division with Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. So Chargers have some issues though. They had some key losses. Lost Tyrell Williams, who has been a key component for that team the last few years. Defensive tackle Darius Filon signed with the Cardinals, and Jason Verrett, who, you know, his 1 year of playing fully was a Pro Bowler, but now the 49ers get a pretty good player. Brought in some veteran players. Thomas Davis, who can help maybe anchor that linebacker core, who saw a lot of injuries last year. And Tyrod Taylor, who's more of a capable backup than Geno Smith or Cardale Jones.
It's a Tyrod, by the way.
You want me to
just give him a little shot with the elbow, Thomas? I will.
His name is Tyrod.
No, it's good. So some of the main questions going in is, how long will Melvin Gordon actually hold out? Are they going to get him a contract? Can Joey Bosa play a full season? He only had 5.5 sacks last year. And what are the Chargers going to do with the right side of the offensive line? Because Sam Tevy, Michael Schofield III weren't very good on the right side going down the stretch. And will Forrest Lamp ever get on the field? Former second round pick in 2015.
That's a great point right
there. I just hope that the Chargers are smart enough to actually put some linebackers on the roster so that if they do get to the AFC playoffs and have to play the Patriots, they don't have to field the infamous 4-1-6 alignment that the Patriots destroyed in last year's playoff game. You got to have some linebackers, and the Chargers need to be prepared for that just in case.
Well, they added Thomas Davis, and now with the return of Jatavis Brown, Denzel Perriman signed a two-year extension coming off an injury, and Kaiser White all coming off injuries. So hopefully they can help step in and protect the run because they were horrendous going down the stretch.
Yes, they were. You know, it was a great Chargers season. It just wasn't good enough.
Not the one everybody
wanted. Interesting is what Ryan Phillips, who filled in for Tony last week, was saying, that Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, would rather deal with Austin Eckler and those guys than have Melvin Gordon. So who knows how serious they are about renegotiating.
I think it was – I can't remember if it was Chris or somebody last week that said that just whatever's going on in Melvin Gordon's camp about not being smart and, like, not thinking about some – you know, what are they telling him? It might be right because – if, say, they get off to a good start and he's still holding out, it's not going to be good for him and his end of trying to hold out.
Well, the worst thing for Melvin Gordon is he's trying to work out a deal with the Chargers.
Good point.
That's the hardest thing of all, because the Chargers, notoriously, that ownership, enough said.
Good point.
All right, good work, Thomas, and we'll look forward to the rest of the football previews as we move along here the next week or two?
NFC West is tomorrow.
NFC West tomorrow. All right. And don't forget, tomorrow we'll be on after Padre Baseball. 12:40 start tomorrow. But tonight we've got Padre Baseball, and the pregame show is coming up shortly.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.